Chapter 6. Raising the Bar. How to do hard things that go beyond what's expected or required. Sarah, a 19-year-old sophomore at Olympic College in Washington, vividly recalls the day she received her worst grade ever on an English paper. It came back from the teacher covered with scribbled comments. At the end, the teacher had added a devastating note and an opportunity. The note said this: "There is much room for improvement, Sarah, should you choose to revise." Surprisingly, it wasn't the grade that hurt. "Not at all," Sarah says. "It was something much bigger. A painful realization that she had been sliding by, measuring her work only by the grades and not by more important criteria, like, have I done my best, or am I actually learning?" Sarah sheepishly told us, "I'd written papers before and knew that they showed a lack of understanding, and yet I still made good grades." But her English professor saw that Sarah was getting by with little effort. She had read my paper carefully and identified what was lacking, but she'd also seen my potential. How did Sarah fall into the rut of delivering only the bare minimum in her classes? "When I first got to school, I actually felt relieved by the low expectations," Sarah explained. "I could hold down my job, do the minimum amount of homework, and still make good grades." But it had come at a cost. She'd become complacent, uncertain even whether she was actually learning anything. As painful as the experience was, Sarah is still grateful that one professor saw through her game and raised the bar. Sarah accepted the challenge and chose to revise. At first, she doubted her ability, but after a few hours of reworking, she realized her new draft was really improved. "Once I revised my paper and saw how much better I did when challenged, the light went on. I realized that I hadn't actually been learning anything before." That day, Sarah realized that if she truly wanted to be prepared for life, she'd have to take responsibility for her own education. If she measured success only by other people's standards of what was good, she would never reach her true potential. She would need to set her own bar high and then do her best to exceed it. You'd think that just doing an assignment and fulfilling a professor's expectations would produce a quality learning experience, she said. But in my case, it didn't. After a year at college and 10 professors, I've realized that at least half of them didn't expect enough of me. Can you relate to Sarah's story? It's easy to be content with less than our best, especially when our half-hearted efforts seem to satisfy everyone around us. And based on what a lot of teens say, being good enough can turn into a special hazard. Those who could do a lot better or tackle a much bigger challenge seldom do so when they're already good enough by other people's standards. What about you? Maybe you've procrastinated on a school project because you knew you could stay up late the night before the deadline and throw something together. Or maybe you've accepted your place in the middle of the pack, even though you know that's not where you belong. In many ways, you can deliver less than 100% and still get away with it. On a team, in youth group, at work, at home, in your personal and spiritual life. In this chapter, we'll look at one of the most important but challenging steps you can take to beat the tide of low expectations. Reject complacency and choose to do hard things that go above and beyond what's required or expected of you. This choice goes right to the heart of what it means to be a revolutionary. Without a doubt, pushing yourself to do more than is asked, expected, or required is nearly always a lonely choice. It can set you apart from friends, co-workers, other Christians, even family. As we'll see, the desire to do your best, even when no one around you requires it, takes a special kind of character. It puts you at odds with the accepted culture, which says, "Just do your best," but means something very different. Think about it. This common phrase, "just do your best," actually encourages the opposite. When someone says, "just do your best," are you inspired to reach for more? Or does it feel like permission to just get by? We say, "hey, I did my best," but did we really? More likely what we mean is, "hey, I gave it a shot, and that will have to be good enough." Believe it or not, the good enough and just do your best mindsets actually stem from the enemy we met earlier, the myth of adolescence. The myth of adolescence tries to get you in one of two ways. The first is to flat out brainwash you with low expectations. If that doesn't work, the myth happily paints you as an exception. In this case, being an exception means that compared to the irresponsibility, immaturity, and incompetence expected from teenagers, you are officially above average. Wow, gold star for you. But wait a minute. Being labeled an exception when you're barely even trying quickly turns into a trap of its own. You can become like Sarah, floating along on your above average status in a river of meager requirements. Your gold star reduces the chances that you'll ever live up to your actual potential. Before long, you'll become blinded by complacency, which is defined as a smug feeling of satisfaction with who you are and what you've done. Recognize that feeling? We do. We like that feeling, honestly. But we're learning that smug satisfaction leads to genuine disappointment before long. Here's why. Like pride, complacency thrives when hidden behind rationalizations, like, hey, I did my best. Obviously, this means that the majority of complacent people don't think they have a problem. And as many wise men throughout history have observed, the most dangerous enemy is the one we fail to recognize. Since you don't think you have a problem, how could you? You're above average. You're an easy victim for a lot of sweet-sounding lies. Imagine if complacency were a person in your life. Mr. Complacency would come up behind you, admire that shiny gold star of yours, and then whisper smugness-inducing flattery like, "People think you're so great. Lucky you. You've got it made without even trying. Everything is going just fine. Why accept a new challenge when you might fail? You're okay just the way you are. Why work to improve yourself? Compared to some people, you're not that bad. And from what I hear, Thomas Edison and Bill Gates never got a gold star." Listen to Mr. Complacency long enough, and he'll convince you that what you really, really need is a nap. But don't kid yourself. The cost of complacency is real, and it can be tragic. We slide into habits of mediocrity and excuse-making. Life gets boring, and we're not sure why. We know, or at least suspect, that there's a lot more we could do or be. But floating along, there's no way to be sure. Might as well take another nap. We recommend that revolutionaries do three hard things that go above and beyond what our culture expects and take us closer to what God expects. Number one, do what's hard for you. Number two, be known for what you do more than for what you don't. And number three, pursue excellence, not excuses. Number one, do what's hard for you. Remember Heidi, the county campaign coordinator in our Alabama Supreme Court race? She jumped into something that for her was terrifying, talking on the phone, especially to strangers. For a lot of teens, being on the phone is like breathing or eating pizza. Can't do without it, don't think much about it when it's happening. But not for Heidi. That's what we mean here when we say, do what's hard for you. A revolutionary takes the time to identify the areas where he or she could accomplish more by stepping across the line of what comes easily and coming out from behind past accomplishments, complacency, and low expectations. Mark is homeschooled, but he plays basketball with the varsity team at the local high school. Mark is one of the top scorers in the division, and basketball has been his life ever since he can remember. He spends hours at the gym almost every day, not including official practices, shooting hundreds of free throws, running drills, and extending the range of his jump shot. If you ask anyone who knows Mark whether he does hard things, they'll say yes, and Mark knows it. But the truth is, he uses his athletic reputation as an excuse to not spend as much time on a lot of things that don't come as naturally to him, like reading difficult books and helping his family out around the house. If Mark were honest with himself, he'd admit that he has allowed other important areas of his life to drift too low on his priority list, or has even dismissed them entirely. all of us have the tendency to emphasize our strong points and then use them as an excuse to neglect our weaker points. And that's Mark's game. We would all like to pick just the strongest areas of our lives and say, "This is me. Ignore everything else. This is who I am." But if we want to live as revolutionaries, we can't afford that luxury. Number 2, be known for what you do, more than for what you don't. Lindsay is in her second year of high school, her first at a private Christian school. Even among other Christian teens at school and church, Lindsay is the good girl who seemingly never does anything wrong. She won't watch R-rated movies, wears a promise ring her dad gave her on her 13th birthday, and won't even date, or court as she puts it, until she's ready to get married. It doesn't make her highly popular among some of her peers, but she cares more about what the adults in her life think. And they praise her constantly, usually while they bemoan all the bad stuff other teens today are involved in. She loves it when she gets compliments for being such a wonderful girl. But when Lindsay is honest, she knows that she's become exceptional for what she doesn't do. She doesn't attend wild parties, cause trouble, or want a tattoo. But what does she do? Is the Christian life all about avoiding bad stuff, or is it about doing good, hard stuff for God? Deep down, Lindsay knows the answer, but she's already praised for being such a godly girl. Isn't that enough? God's word is clear. Our culture's standard of simply not doing bad stuff is really no standard at all. Psalm 1, verse 1, tells us, "Blessed is the man who walks not in the counsel of the wicked, nor stands in the way of sinners, nor sits in the seat of scoffers." A lot of people, though, seem to quit reading there and miss the rest of the sentence. "But his delight is in the law of the Lord, and on his law he meditates day and night." Number 3. Pursue excellence, not excuses. Mary is a junior in high school. A strong Christian, she proudly puts to rest the idea that Christians are stupid and unpopular by being head of her class and co-captain of the cheerleading squad. Her parents, teachers, and youth pastor all have big plans for her, and Mary has big plans for herself. But because things come easily for her, she's become comfortable with her standout status. She doesn't have to tell herself she's great because other people will do it for her, even when she hasn't done anything particularly difficult. She's above average without even trying, so she sees no reason to push herself. Mary has fallen prey to the curse that low expectations place on talented people. She has gotten stuck doing what comes easily because even things that are easy for her are impressive to others. In her mind, she has already arrived, yet she has never explored the true extent of her potential. Shortly after we started the Revolution blog, we received the following comment, which addresses the complacency Mary has slipped into and then points the way out. "The real danger for youths intent on revolution is that these smarter-than-the-average-bear kudos can become the new and easy standard. Unfortunately, we often get praised for things that weren't particularly difficult to achieve. If we focus on the props and the encouragement of those who have low expectations for us, we become mediocre. It can be challenging to set our sights on excellence, particularly when we're hearing that we're already there. One of life's greatest lessons, which we all must learn, could be expressed in the phrase, 'That was nothing. Watch this.' Challenge yourself and others to call the normal things normal and save that word 'excellent' for things that really are." Since we got this letter, we've received several others from teens complaining about getting corny awards at school, like the Celebration of Excellence for Leadership. All they'd done was turn in their homework and pay attention in class while everyone else goofed off. "It's sad how little I had to do to earn this award," wrote one girl. Just like Mary, we can get so caught up in being the godliest person in our youth group or in earning the Celebration of Excellence for Leadership award that we lose sight of God's standards. We fall short of our true potential because we aimed only to be bigger than the next fish in our small pond. The students who have written to us recognize this and weren't about to hijack their futures just because they had managed to exceed mediocre standards. They realized that God's standard is not for us to be the godliest person in a youth group filled with nominal Christians, but to be holy because He is holy. God's standard is not for us to be our teacher's best helper, but to be a servant of all. God set His standards this high so that we won't make the mistake of aiming low. He made them unreachable so that we would never have an excuse to stop growing. We can identify complacency in our lives by asking ourselves the following hard questions and then answering them honestly. What areas of my life do I not care about that I know I should care about? In what areas have I fallen short of God's standards and my own potential? In what areas have I settled for just getting by when I know I could do better if I really tried? In what areas have I decided that things will always be this way without ever putting in the kind of effort that really changes things? These questions are difficult because no one else can answer them for you. Only you know how much better you could be if you really tried. And if you've never really tried, then even you might not know. For a strong shot of inspiration, jump back with us 150 years to the story of a young man who didn't seem to have much going for him except mediocrity and limitations. Then he decided to rethink what he'd been considering good enough and reach for something more. As a young teenager, Theodore Roosevelt didn't strike anyone as the kind of person who would become one of America's greatest presidents. From the time he was a toddler, severe asthma overshadowed everything he did. He was considered too delicate for school and too weak to stand up to other boys. On doctor's orders, his father and mother rushed him to seashore resorts and mountain cabins in hopes that changes of air would help him breathe. The sickly boy seemed unlikely to survive childhood, let alone amount to anything if he did. Of course, we all know that Theodore Teddy Roosevelt did more than survive. In a way that few men have matched, he thrived. In the eyes of his fellow Americans, he went on to reach the stature of George Washington, Thomas Jefferson, and Abraham Lincoln, his face forever immortalized with theirs on the side of Mount Rushmore. More than any of his contemporaries, Roosevelt led America into the 20th century. He was a cowboy on the western frontier, a police commissioner in New York City, a military hero in the Spanish-American War, and the governor of New York. He was the first president to fly in an airplane, to be submerged in a submarine, to have a telephone in his home, or to own a car. He was the first president to champion conservation and pass laws to protect the environment. He was the first president to leave American soil while in office. And in 1906, he became the first American Nobel laureate, awarded the Nobel Peace Prize for almost single-handedly negotiating a peaceful end to the Russo-Japanese War. How did a severely nearsighted, asthmatic kid who wasn't expected to live past his 21st birthday go on to experience a life of such incredible accomplishment? The short answer is that as a teenager, Roosevelt chose to go beyond what was easy by reaching for what seemed impossible. Shortly before his 12th birthday, his father took him aside and challenged him to dedicate himself to the hard drudgery of building himself a strong body. Convinced and determined, young Roosevelt gave himself to it, spending hours each day lifting weights, hammering punching bags, and straining at pull-up bars. His sisters would later write that one of their most vivid childhood memories was the sight of their brother struggling between the horizontal bars, widening his chest by regular, monotonous motion. Drudgery indeed, they wrote. This was the beginning of the transformation, more than just physical, that would shape the rest of his life. Decades later, with conviction birthed in the hard drudgery of his teen years, Roosevelt said that the highest form of success would go only to the man who does not shrink from danger, from hardship, or from bitter toil. Theodore Roosevelt learned the most important lesson of his life as a teenager. It was a lesson that informed and made possible everything he did from that point on. Do hard things. Listen to what he said about what he called the strenuous life. I wish to preach not the doctrine of ignoble ease, but the doctrine of the strenuous life, the life of effort, of labor and strife. To preach that highest form of success which comes not to the man who desires mere easy peace, but to the man who does not shrink from danger, from hardship, or from bitter toil, and who out of these wins the splendid, ultimate triumph. Of course, nowadays we don't talk the way Roosevelt did. But what would happen if we embraced the values he did, of reaching above and beyond what comes easily? And what would happen if a new generation of teens lived that way? Start now.